Hello, everyone. Welcome to Degrowth in Scotland podcast. My name is Nico. I'm so excited to be here because I have a special guest. So you're going to hear me talking to two people. I'm going to be talking to Joss Allen and Kat Chambers. So yes, this podcast brought to you by Enough Scottish Degrowth Network, a network for everyone in Scotland and anyone in Scotland who's interested or doing work in degrowth and decolonization. Wow. That's what I'm so excited to hear all about it. Because I don't know nothing much about this, but I'm going to be asking three questions every guest here. So yeah, let's go straight to Joss. Joss, please introduce yourself and tell us where you are, what's going on. I'm so excited to hear more about the degrowth actually from you and Kat Chambers. So let's take us through that.
So my name is Joss Allen, and I'm currently the co-director at Atlas Arts with my partner Yvonne Billymore. And so we're stepping in while the director Ainsley is off on maternity leave, so we're here for 12 months, and we started at the beginning of November, I'm originally from the east coast of Scotland, but I've been living in Helsinki in Finland for the last couple of years, and I guess I would describe myself as an art worker. Which takes on various different guises, but usually supporting people to make art in lots of different ways.
Okay, the first question is, how would you explain or describe degrowth or decolonization to the people who are listening?
I guess it's a word that has many kind of definitions and interpretations, but maybe from my own understanding, I see degrowth as a kind of rejection of a particular understanding of the economy, and I think that's a particular understanding of the economy that seems very separate from other spheres of life. You know, the kind of economy that does things to you, but you don't really do things to it. A kind of economy that maybe places, so that where the demands of the economy are always placed above the needs of the environment. And I see degrowth as a kind of a challenge to that kind of understanding of what economy is. So it's this idea that, I guess, that for us to continue in a way that is not going to deplete the earth. We need to not just kind of have no growth, but we actually need to do something drastic about our consumption, in a way that allows the planet to start regenerating. And so for me, degrowth is really about how we can sort of develop the imaginaries and the strategies to do this. So it's about as much as about the kind of the stories that we want to develop as it is about the kind of practices involved in doing that. And I see the stories as a really important part of it, because I think maybe one of the criticisms that I understand that degrowth often gets is that it's just sort of taking away things from people. You know, that it's removing all the good parts of life. And I think it's really important that, like, you know, when you're trying to get people motivated, involved in a movement like that, that you don't just say, like, no, these are all the things that you can't do. And then you don't replace that with the good parts, you know? So I think that's why, like, the story side of things is also really important, because it's not just about saying, no, these are the things that we shouldn't be doing. It's about, like, hey, but actually, here's a whole new narrative, a whole new way of kind of being that we can actually develop together. And so I think where the decolonization comes into this, for me anyway, is that it's really about, like, seeing the connections between inequality, injustice, and all its different forms, whether that's racism, you know, and seeing that actually that there's a link between these and the destruction of the environment and the climate crisis. And I think it's sort of recognizing that the way that we think, the way that we construct our world and our worldviews are sort of deeply ingrained with a past that was a past kind of colonizing mentality. And I think it's about acknowledging that and working towards dismantling those systems of oppression and injustice. But I also just wanted to mention just another point on that, because there's a paper that I read a wee while ago that I think also made like a really kind of important point when it comes to decolonization. And I think this was to recognize that decolonization is not a metaphor. So I think it's important to recognize that like decolonization, like what that means, is about the reparation of land and life, you know, and that it shouldn't become kind of a byword for all sorts of other things that we want to do to improve societies and schools. But it's about sort of recognizing the root of that as well. I think that's important too.
Hey, we're going to move on to the question number two. How do you put these ideas into practice in your work and community?
Yeah, so I guess with Atlas Arts, at the moment we're going through a period of writing our strategic plan for the business for the next 4 years. So we've been trying to think how we can put our kind of vision and values into practice through our operations and also through our program. And I think a lot of it is actually, you know, it's quite new, some of these things that we're trying to do. And it's a lot of it is, let's say, it's an experiment. We're trying to figure out exactly what we can do about it. But some of the things that we've been trying to do, for instance, particularly around degrowth, is we've been thinking how through like our program and also our operations, we can sort of rethink and highlight the kind of different ways that an arts organization can help to build more sort of resilient local economies, which are based on kind of principles of degrowth that are looking for kind of social and ecological justice. And so one of the ways that we've been thinking about doing that is through a new role in the organization we're hoping to develop, which is called the Alternative Economies Manager. And so this is a role that will be sort of fundamental, hopefully, to how the organization goes forward and looks to address the way that we deal with funding and finance as an organization. So thinking about like how we fundraise, whether it's ethical, could we do it in ways that are more collaborative, so that it kind of is more cooperative. It's not about kind of fighting for funds with other organizations, but how can we do that together so that we can strengthen kind of relationships and contribute to developing a more diverse and resilient economy. So that's one sort of thing that we've been exploring, and I guess our work is really about exploring the relationship between art practices and social change. And so I think we've been having a lot of conversations about like what an arts organization's role is in a community, in the different communities that we work in. How can we create opportunity to come together to start to discuss some of these really important things and issues that like movements like degrowth raise. And so, yeah, I guess it's all a work in progress at the moment.
Okay, we're coming to the last question. Is there is a phrase, if it's not just, it's not degrowth. What that means to you?
So I guess the first thing I was sort of thinking about was, if it's not just, then for me that's obviously about like the importance of the kind of ethics involved in degrowth, you know, and that's really important And it's really important also to see like the intersectionality, so the relationships between kind of social justice, ecological justice, you know, that these things are not separate, that you have to be doing all these things. It's kind of an all or nothing kind of strategy. So that was the first kind of thing that makes me think of. But then I really like to find out like the root meaning of words. So I'm always kind of like looking up the etymology of certain words, and I think it's a really useful way to think about how we can maybe use those words slightly differently, or have a better understanding of them, or you know, think with them differently. And so I think the root word of just comes from French, and has another meaning, which is sincere. So I thought maybe that's an interesting way to think about it, you know, like to make, you know, that it's about being sincere. And so that means really like developing ways of being and strategies that are sincere. So I thought that was maybe an interesting way to think of it.
Okay, thank you so much, Joss Allen, for coming to the podcast. That was me and Joss talking there. And well explained as well, because I didn't know actually the phrase of just, and you did explain a lot very well. I'm sure a lot of people also will catch that phrase. So now, as I promised from the beginning, I'll be talking to Joss Allen and Kate Chambers. So now we're going to hear me talking to Kate.
Hi, Nico. My name's Kate Chambers. I live just outside Edinburgh in Midlothian. And I'm really excited to be with you today talking about degrowth and decolonisation. My background, I currently work as a circular economy consultant. So what that means, you know, it's one of those jobs where you say I'm a consultant and people are like, what does that actually mean? But basically, I help clients to look at new economic models. So moving away from a linear economic model, thinking about taking natural resources from the earth, using them to make products and then disposing of them at end of life. What I'm trying to do with the organisation that I work for, Resource Futures, is move towards a circular model where we keep resources in use for as long as possible. So really trying to move to an economic system that operates within our planetary boundaries, because as we both know, we've got a finite amount of resources on planet Earth. And at the rate that we're going at, we're exploiting them very, very seriously and putting humankind, our ecosystems, at a lot of risk. So that's kind of where I come to this degrowth conversation, is from an environmental point of view.
Thank you. Okay, straight to the question number one. Yeah. So good. Question number one, how would you explain or describe a degrowth in Scotland, decolonization, to people who are listening right now or in the future?
I think the terms degrowth and decolonization, even for me to say them, are difficult. So I know how people feel when they hear them and they just think, what does that even mean? But for me, as I said, I've kind of come to this from an environmental perspective, and I've always been interested in how we manage our resources and waste. And I suppose where I'm really interested in this is when we think about how Scotland has moved since the Industrial Revolution. It's been really focused on extracting natural materials from around the world and using them for this idea of progress. And I think the really exciting thing about degrowth is that it sort of dives into, what does progress even mean? What is this idea? Is it making us happier? Is it making us healthier? And kind of critiquing some of those accepted ideologies. So it's a kind of, for me, I'm looking at it from the angle of, is this enlightenment project, which if you think about kind of the Industrial Revolution, it was a civilizing project, supposedly, and a technological project, but it is all based on the premise that we can have infinite growth on a finite planet. And degrowth is really challenging those ideas and saying, well, we can't just continue to grow forever because we only have so much stuff on the planet. And we only have so much resource, which we're very quickly realizing that as soon as we mess with our ecological systems, it comes back to bite us in the form of biodiversity crisis, the climate change crisis, and then all the human impact as well. So poverty, you know, the health implications, there's so much tied up with the sort of capitalist project of growth.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I don't know if you can touch a bit about decolonization as well. If you can go a bit on that.
Yeah, so I think from my background, looking specifically at waste and resources, very much of the way that we've managed waste over the past 200 years has been tied up with the colonial project as well from the West. So these ideas that we can just take resources from around the world, use them to advance our own economy, and then send the waste from the end back to the global South and other countries that we've exploited through that process. So I suppose from my point of view, when I was thinking about environmental issues, I was very much coming at it from looking at planetary boundaries. But then you realise that actually so much of the social and political problems that we see from the result of globalisation and colonialism is very much tied into the exploitation of the earth as well. So taking materials from other countries for the advancement of the West. So I see those two things as going hand in hand, talking about degrowth and decolonization together.
Yeah. Thank you. That's really, I'm learning.
I mean, that's the thing to say as well, that this is a learning process for me, because obviously there's so many different angles to come to these problems, and I'm very much focused on the environmental side, but the social side, the climate justice side, there's so many different ways to approach these topics. So yeah, I'm 100% not an expert either. I'm learning as I go.
Oh yeah, we'll move on to question number two. How do you put these ideas into practice in your work or community?
So I mentioned a little bit about the work that I do in the circular economy. Yes, and I think that's sort of where these concepts come into play for me. So obviously I work in circular economy, looking at ways to utilise resources and keep them in play for longer. So that could mean, I think people think that means recycling, and recycling is just one part of the system. But what we really want to get to is reuse and avoidance of waste in the first place. So actually not using as much resources for how we live our lives. At the moment, you know, the statistics show that it's Western countries that are creating the most emissions from their consumption. So we currently live way, way above our planetary boundaries. We are exploiting the earth with the amount of resource that we use for our daily life. So if you're thinking about our cars, we've all got private cars, we've all got foreign holidays, lots of kind of exploitative and very carbon intense hobbies and ways of living. So the work I do is trying to look at how we can reduce our emissions towards a circular economy, keep resources in use, but also actually shift the way that we think about resources, and not always thinking about how we get the most, but how we redistribute these resources. And one of the things that's come up a lot in my work is thinking about waste colonialism as well. So the way that the recycling system is built in Europe at the moment is very much predicated on the idea that we can send our waste to other countries. And the work that I do is thinking about how do we, as sort of supposedly industrialized nations, actually build infrastructure to deal with our own waste. You know, the UK should not be exporting waste. We should be dealing with our domestic waste rather than sending it to countries that maybe don't have the infrastructure to deal with huge amounts of plastic, huge amounts of textiles, all the waste that is being used by the global north, and then just being exported to other countries to deal with the problem and clean it up.
Yeah, this is from me. Do you think that we should have more topics around degrowth and decolonization, or even discussions at your work, for example?
Oh yeah, 100%. That's something that I've actually brought up with the organization that I work for, because we are working with a lot of clients around the world who you know, governments who are writing policy around dealing with waste. And a lot of the time it's just very technical. It's very focused on how do we move this waste? How do we change the structures of dealing with waste? But there's no conversation about how the system that we've got allows for this to happen. And actually, like, it's a colonial system, isn't it? If you are taking resources from one country. So if we think about cobalt, for example, that we're using in all our technology, that's being mined in, I think it's in the Congo, Dominican Republic of the Congo. That material is then used in everything technological that we use in the West. And then once we don't want our old iPhones anymore, or our old laptops, we're just sending them in containers back to the continent of Africa. And just, you know, that whole system is very, very broken, and no amount of kind of changing little bits of the system is going to help. We have to do transformational change and have decolonization at the heart of any like power dynamic around that, because it's just exploitative in the very way that we think about the management of resources.
Yeah, sometimes even myself, I feel guilty having a mobile phone and looking at these pictures of kids digging those cobras and stuff. It's like, yeah, we're all both stuck in this situation where like people don't know, some of them, where this thing come from, and some of us will know but will do nothing, you know.
But do you know what I think as well, Nico? It's kind of difficult because I think most people know that a phone is made in quite disturbing situation. You know, you've got to mine for that material, and nobody really wants to do that job of mining the materials, the rare earth materials for the phone. But then in the West, there's a pressure to like have a new phone.
Exactly.
So you might have a phone that's a bit rubbish, but it's fine, it works. But then you feel this internal pressure and this social pressure to then get rid of that and get a new one. So we're in this horrible sort of paradox where we know it's wrong, we know what's happening is wrong, but as a consumer we're just like, oh god, but I really want a new iPhone.
Yeah.
So you're in this horrible situation where you know the system is broken but you're still contributing to it.
Yeah, said even like in those countries, poor countries, their government is not doing anything when it comes to realize and to talk about degrowth, decolonization. There's not much. I think that's the purpose of this podcast, talking to people and trying to raise awareness, and as well educating people. Like I'm learning myself today.
So, and also, I don't think it's the responsibility of the individual. You know, you can do your best in a system, but as you said, like, it's governments who are setting the rules of the game. And it's them that have to, you know, we have to put pressure on our governments to change those rules and change the policy. But until that happens, it's very difficult to have an influence as an individual. You know, you can only do as much as you can do in a system that is very broken.
Okay, we're coming to the last question. Is there is a phrase, if it's not just, it's not degrowth. What that means to you?
Never heard that phrase. If it's not just, it's not degrowth. So that shows how I'm learning, because I didn't know that phrase. But to me, I suppose that means that justice and fairness and sort of critique of the current capitalist ideology has to be at the centre of anything that you, you know, any conversation about degrowth. Because unless we challenge a system that is inherently unfair and unjust, then you're not going to get these changes that we want to see. So again, I'll just bring it back to the environmental perspective for me. We need to reduce our emissions and we need to protect our ecosystems and stop exploiting them. But unless we have a global shift towards more justice for the people who live and work in all these communities that are responsible for creating all the things that we use, then we're not actually going to see that change. We need justice for the workers who produce materials and live in these communities and are being exploited before you can actually see a shift towards changes for the environment and for, so I suppose for me, I'm very much learning about we need to shift towards climate justice for communities around the world before we can see real reduction in emissions and then protection of biodiversity, circular economy. All these things need to be predicated on justice. They can't be, you know, the inherent unfairness of our system can't come forward with us into a new low carbon society. We have to change the very structures of capitalism and the exploitative nature of our economic systems.
Is that, you mentioned injustice. I can hear that word. Do you think there's a modern slavery right now? Or when you look at this, we just talk about
yeah.
There's lots of what would you say about what do you see on a modern slavery?
I think
I'll put it this way. Like for example, when I go to the shops, I can see there's a chilies. It says from Sri Lanka. There's a fruit from this hot places, and I thought maybe that's healthy. But when I think about these guys pick those fruits that are getting paid nothing, you know. So I don't know. As an environmental yourself, I wanted to look at globally the treatment of labor of poor people.
Yeah, that's very pertinent to the work I do as well in waste. So not just, you know, your example about fruit pickers and these supply chains where we're getting stuff from all over the world that isn't in season and who's, you know, what are the conditions for the people producing that? But then you've also got a lot of waste management around the world is collected. The system of collecting waste in a lot of countries that don't have formal infrastructure is through informal waste pickers. So predominantly women who are, you know, working for very, very little money and are responsible for collecting up all these bottles of drinks, containers that big multinational companies are creating these drinks. They're selling the drinks into economies without any waste management infrastructure. And then predominantly women are getting paid tiny amounts of money to then collect up all that waste for recycling. So even that system, to me, is a kind of form of, I don't know if you would call it modern slavery, but it's a very unjust and very shocking way of managing waste, because it's these companies that are putting all these plastics into the communities and then there's no sort of formal way of managing that material. And we also see it with the rise of fast fashion and textiles. So not only are we producing huge amounts of waste, plastic waste, but also cotton waste from the amount of textiles that we're consuming. But then you understand that, again, predominantly women from the global south are having to work in horrendous conditions to produce our clothes for, you know, they're being sold for a couple of pounds, a £3 t-shirt. And you're thinking, how can you possibly get the resources and then also pay someone a fair living wage to make that product? So I would say 100% when it comes to certain industries, there's definitely some questions around modern slavery. How can that even, economically, that doesn't make sense. How can you produce a t-shirt for £3 when someone has to be paid fairly to make that t-shirt?
I think that's degrowth comes out, like if you look at it.
Yeah, like we can't consume that much material, but then also it doesn't, because I don't know if you hear this just on textiles specifically, some people say, oh, but at least people have jobs to make the t-shirts. And then you think, but that is not a benefit to them to make such a tiny amount of money. You know, we have to, as consumers who buy clothing, we have to be prepared to pay more for better quality material that's going to last a long time. And then that has to then be passed on to the maker of that. And in the middle, there's this big company who's taken the profit and given us both, you know, given the person who bought the t-shirt and the person who made the t-shirt a rubbish outcome. And the person in the middle who took the profit is the only person happy with the system. The rest of us are like, no, that's not good.
Well, like, I think when the lockdown finished, when they started easing down, I used to go to Citizen in Glasgow and I see this queue in Primark. People are queuing outside in Primark and they buy clothes every day. I'm thinking, I don't know, I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm just like, really? You know what I mean? Like, if you look, go to that shop and their prices, I know this discussion's been going for years. Primark and other cheap shops that they're using poor people in these poor places. And you go west and then they find it very funny to actually be queuing on the rain.
And see, to be honest, like, I can see why people do that, because that's our culture. Like, I would say for myself, you know, when I grew up and I was a teenager, I maybe didn't have a lot of money, and you know, my family didn't have a lot, but when I started making my own money, the first thing I wanted to do was shop.
Yeah.
I wanted to go to the cheap shops, I wanted to get lots and lots of clothes. And then it was only as I got kind of older in my teen years that I was sort of thinking, why is my hobby shopping? Like, isn't that weird? Buying stuff isn't a hobby. It's just, we're made to think in the West that that's like part of your personality. And I think that's why people do this queuing outside and wanting to have the new stuff, because the culture is like novelty and you always have to be buying. And actually, like, we've kind of been conditioned, or I don't know, it's like we've been tricked into thinking that we have to buy all the time and consume all the time in order to be a functioning person.
Yeah, that's in. Thank you so much for coming to Degrowth podcast. And yeah, that was great.
Thanks, Nico. Thanks for having me.
That's good. Great episode, this one. So I'm excited again for the next episode. I'm going to be talking, you're going to hear me here talking to two fantastic guests as well. And so I'm going to be talking to Lauren Peyot. Lauren Peyot, she's the founder and managing director of Glassworks Enterprise in Inverness. So she's going to tell us more about that once you hear me talking to them. Then you can hear me talking to Matt Becker. He has been a full-time public artist for over 25 years, and he's an activist, so it's very interesting. So on the 31st of March, 2022, we will be hosting a gathering in Glasgow. This gathering is open to anyone who's challenging our economic system in big or small ways. So to hear more, to check more information, go to www.enough.scot/. Thank you.